Veterans Affairs on the 15th of February. We have a special guest today. We're going to move the order a little bit here, folks, and I'll tell you why. We have some people that are, one, over 100 miles, and two, we have our legislator, our speaker, Roblin, here to testify on a bill. I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2638. Speaker Roblin.
And I'll bring the part of the rest of the group up.
Mr. Speakers, my name is Arne Roblin, for the record. I'm representing from House District 9. This bill comes to you at the request of some really great people from the area of Florence, Oregon. And as each of you know, it's sometimes difficult to say yes or no to constituents about any particular bill that comes forward to us. And we get a lot of questions asked. And so I wanted to give you a little scenario of how this has happened with me. My first indication generally with a bill when it comes from a request, especially when it costs any money, is to say, we don't have any money. It's not really, I don't know. But we have a group of veterans here, and I'm going to introduce, and they'll introduce them to you, who have been persistent in a very positive way over a number of months, I think probably even a year now or so, two years, about preserving some history on the coast with regard to veterans. And they have gone through all the processes of raising their own money, getting property, fixing that property, buying a building but not having it put up, all of those things. And they have shown me the progress. They have brought me to meetings where they've gone through and done exactly what they're doing. And the last thing they wanted was to ask for any money. They wanted to do this all on their own. That was their whole goal and whatever. And then they run into the same issues that all of us do. Where it's located, there are permits that have to be done. There's other kinds of things. They thought they had resources to do almost everything that they needed to do. They ran into issues with the property and wetlands and all the things that all of us know about. And they continued to go after the problem one step at a time to solve those problems for themselves. And at the end, probably a month, 2 months ago, just before the session was starting, I had just asked, is there anything I can do for you? And they said, well, there actually is. And one of the members who was here came and said and sat down and talked about what they would need and how that could go. And I said, okay. I asked. I'll put in a bill. And so what you're going to hear today is a little bit about that and the effort that these people have put together. Sam Spade is sitting next to me. He's the president of the organization that continues to work with people in the Florence community, and it's pretty remarkable, actually, what they've done and the commitment from people in chunks as little as $5 to keep putting this together and talking to people and going to any group that wants to listen to have the conversations. And I thought we needed to hear how local groups of people work together to try to preserve the history and show their grandchildren and other children the efforts that went on before them. So with that, I'll turn it over to Sam Spade.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Representative Roblin, could I have Tim and Paul please come up here with me? Thank you. Thank you, Arne. Appreciate it. I'll let them come up here, and then I'll get started here if I could.
We just wanted to bring this along to show you what the museum will look like when we're done. I better show the audience before I turn it around the other way.
Chairman Esquivel, Chairman Witt, members of the Veterans Affairs Committee, we are very pleased to be able to have a few minutes of your time.
Excuse me, could you identify yourself
for
the record, please?
Yes, sir. I'm pleased to be here to present the Oregon Coast Military Heritage Museum to you. I'm Thomas F. Sam Spade, nickname I got in the service. I'm a Florence resident. President of the Oregon Coast Military Heritage Museum, and I'm a 30-year veteran of the Air Force. I'm a veteran of Vietnam as well as Desert Storm. And I'd like to introduce, have the other members of the panel here introduce themselves now.
Hi, I'm Tim Sapp, a Vietnam veteran from Florence.
Yes, and my name is Paul Gargis, retired Army, 21 years, two tours in Vietnam.
It's funny when we're talking to Arnie there, and he says a few months ago, and he starts saying a year, and then he starts saying 2 years. I think up here you know how things seem to go on and on. And we've been actually working 2 years since we came up with the idea of forming what we call the Kilroy Corps. Now, some of you folks may have known who Kilroy was from World War II. Kilroy was here, that sort of thing. So we decided since we had 21% of the population of Florence are veterans, we started putting out the word that we were going to form the Kilroy Corps. And the purpose of that was to create the Oregon Coast Military Heritage Museum. Big, long name. We're kind of shortening it down to the Kilroy Corps. The idea was that there are no military museums in this part of the state. Nearest one we have is there's an Air and Space Museum in Eugene, and, of course, McMinnville is up the road, and also Tillamook. But those are the nearest museums we have to the Florence area and the South Coast area there. So we started this effort with the Kilroy Corps. Initially, it was to get information out to the people and get interest going, so we said be a $20 fee to join the Kilroy Corps. Well, we started that, and then right away people came to us and said, well, I want to give more. So then we started the Century Corps for anybody with $100 or more. And it's grown now that we have 450 people have donated money, some people as much as $5,000, because they believe in what we're doing. And it's been a pleasure on our part to drive this effort. There's 10 of us on the board, and we work hard at this. We're all volunteers, and we have collected $54,000 now. And the problem that we're having is that because of escalating fees, it's going to cost us about $34,000 to $35,000 for just the permits from the city of Florence. And also the electrical PUD wants to charge us $7,000 for electrical hookup for the facilities. We're trying to talk to them about being a nonprofit organization, and can they get some help from that? And they're not leaning that way very much at all right now. But we're hoping that in the future we'll get some discounts from that. But right now it doesn't look very promising. We are amazed at the support we're getting from the community. And I'd like to turn the microphone over to Tim Sapp to tell you a little bit about, he's in charge of the production and the building of the building and cooperation with the local engineers and excavators that are helping with the initial plans for the building. So, Tim, would you like to talk about that?
Thank you. We have got lots of help from the community. A lot of the veterans have chipped in. I'll just update you. We have the property is secured from the city, and we have the ground cleared for where the building will sit. We have some more clearing to do, but we have that cleared and filled and ready to go. We've turned in some the building plans to the city, but we need some finances to get them out of there. We've traveled a long ways. We have purchased a 4,000 square foot metal building, and we're going to add a stick building next to it that'll make 5,000 square feet for the museum. And it's neat to see the veterans all turn out, but we have come up a little short. I was thinking about what I might say, and sitting in the back there, it just reminded me of occasionally when I was in Vietnam, and we were out, and we spent a lot of time out in the jungle, but we'd get in a firefight once in a while, and you'd run short of ammo, and, you know, you could always go back to the base, and if you could make it there and fill up again. But it kind of reminded me of this situation. You know, we've come a long ways, and we've fought this for a couple of years now, and we're to the point where we're getting low on ammo. And so, you know, we've come here to ask for help, and we appreciate your the time you're taking to listen to us.
I think one further important thing.
Excuse me,
to bring
gentlemen,
up.
But every time you turn that mic, you should introduce yourself again for the record.
Okay, very well. Thomas F. Spade from Florence, Oregon. I think one of the important things about this museum is the fact, as we all know, that the fishing and the forestry industry is not very prevalent in the Florence area now, and tourism is becoming a bigger thing, a bigger draw for money into the area. And that's one of the side benefits of having this museum. Our motto at the museum is to honor our veterans by educating the public. And one of the things we want to do is the 21% of the veterans in the Florence area, we want to honor them by educating the public. So we're working on some educational programs already, even though we don't have a museum, with the local schools. I went down to Scottsdale, Arizona in November and worked a deal with Joe Foss Institute, which is nationwide. They work with veterans in getting into the schools and talking to the schools about liberty, about patriotism, about integrity, and they have the veterans talk to the students and bring them the current issues of what's going on with the veterans and how they live their lives after they came home. So one of the important things in tying in with that is we're getting into our local schools, and hopefully all of Western Oregon will be able to get into the schools and talk about those very same things tied in with the Joe Foss Institute. Another thing, too, is that because of the draw of the museum, we're hoping and we're sure that it's going to increase the tourist industry in the area. It's going to increase the spending of money in the area by people passing through, by tourism. And we think that that's going to be a huge benefit to the whole Central Coast area in the completion of the museum. Paul, would you like to add anything?
My name is Paul Gargas, a retired Army, two-tour Vietnam vet. In addition to educating the public, of course, we're going to be custodian of the equipment that we're going to store and display to the public. I already have obtained an application for a static display, such as an artillery piece or a tank, and we're going to try to get that from Fort McCoy. One of the things that I do notice, and I see you're a Vietnam vet, you know, we went for years there, the Korean War veterans, the Forgotten War, and us guys in Vietnam. About the only person we talked to was other vets, because no one really understood where we were coming from, where we'd been, what we'd done. And today with the Afghanistan-Iraqi thing, you see that if you look around, because of you people sitting here today, you see all kind of Korean War vet caps, Vietnam veteran caps you'd never seen before. All these guys are coming out and they're displaying their pride in their country and what they did and where they were. And I think this museum is going to do a whole heck of a lot getting more of these guys out, talking to each other, and donating equipment for our museum that we're going to need. And like I just say, I'm proud to have been invited to serve in this capacity.
Thomas Spade, one important closing remark that I would like to make is that we're losing up to 1,500 World War II veterans a day in this country. And another amazing statistic that I just saw recently, because people kind of hear that one, but from the 2000 census, we're losing 390 Vietnam War veterans a day in this country now. And that's a phenomenal number. When I thought that the World War II veterans was a huge number, but then I started thinking, those are the people that I fought with and they're my compatriots and my age. Losing 390 of them a day, and that's from the 2000 census. Anything else?
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for your testimony, but more importantly, thank you for your service and welcome home, soldiers.
Thank you very much.
Is there anyone else that would like to testify on House Bill 2638? If not, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2638. I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2241. I believe Representative Matthews will have the helm on this.
Representative, we'd like to read the bill first.
House Bill 2241 broadens the definition of uniform service for employment protection to match the federal definition under the ERISA Act. Adds initial active duty for training as a type of military leave for which the public employee may take leave of absence. This has an emergency clause, and it's effective on passage.
Representative.
Thank you, Chair Esquivel and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Greg Matthews, State Representative of House District 50, the great city of Gresham. Perhaps you've all heard of it. It's legendary in the state. many of you might recall, oh, you know it is. So. many of you might recall in 2009 legislature, we had a very great agenda. It was, I would say, of all the things that we did in that session, I was very proud of the work we did for our veterans. But in that, too, what we thought we were doing, we actually didn't do enough of. And one of those is a real quick technical fix. I don't think this bill is going to be a lot of controversy, although I have heard from some of the businesses just to clarify our intent. And that is regarding USERRA, which is the Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act of 1994. House Bill 3256 was passed in 2009 and provided the state law prohibiting employment discrimination against service members for fulfilling their service obligation. It was an important bill, important legislation, and did amazing things, but it did leave out just a couple of folks. So what this does, it will expand and broaden that definition of uniform service under House Bill 3256. It will include all service members covered by USERRA. And we were in a situation where basically the bill that we passed was softer than the federal regulation of USERRA, because we did leave out a few folks in that umbrella of definition. So I think there's some folks from Boley that will testify about that today, and I appreciate the help of the agencies in getting this right. Any questions, Mr. Chair?
Any questions of the representative? Thank you, Representative.
I have one, Mr. Chair.
Oh, yes.
Thank you, sir. Representative, who did we leave out, if you don't mind the laundry list?
It's not really very long. Coast Guard was one of the first, I believe, and I think Boley's going to be able to expand that further for you. I'm sorry, that escapes me right now.
Oh, that's fine. If Boley's going to cover it, that's fine. Thanks.
Yeah, I think they'll expand on that, but thank you. And I'm sorry, Co-Chair Escobar, Co-Chair Rep Witt, Co-Vice Chair Parrish, and Representative Huffman, thank you.
That was
wow, that's confusing. I think that's a clue that we don't want to ask you a question again, Representative. So, we next have on the list, I believe, is Kate Newhall and Brigadier General Caldwell. Would you two come forward together, please?
Thank you, Chair Escobar, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kate Newhall. I'm the Legislative Director with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Boley appreciates the opportunity to be here today to testify in support of House Bill 2241, and I will say Representative Matthews did not leave me much more in my testimony to say, although I will answer the question from Representative Huffman. As the agency that's responsible for the enforcement of the state's employment protections for our uniformed service men and women, we fully support this legislation and what we consider two technical corrections. The first is, as Representative Matthews explained, aligning the definition in our state law of uniformed service with the definition found in federal law. The biggest difference between the two, and I think it's a very small universe of people, but still a universe that we want to make sure are covered by these protections, are the Commissioned Corps of the United States Public Health Service and any other category of persons designated by the President of the United States in a time of war or national emergency. So I think the main one, though, is the Public Health Service. So again, we believe that streamlining these two definitions will provide greater protections for our service people and provide businesses with more consistency and certainty when applying state and federal law. We also support the second technical correction in this bill, which is to provide state employees 2 weeks of paid leave for both their initial active duty training and their active duty training, not just active duty training as is in current law. ORS 408-290 has been in existence since at least 1955 and provides that public employees are entitled to up to 15 days leave in any given training year for all periods of their active duty training. It also provides that these public employees be provided with this leave without loss of pay, leaves, other benefits, except for when the employee is a new employee. This benefit for public employees is provided only for the active duty training. It's not also provided for this initial active duty training. The employment protections passed by House Bill 3256 define service as including initial active duty training, and our rule is in accord. The Department of Administrative Services raised the concern to us, and we agree that if state agencies are denying benefits under 408-290 for persons in this initial active duty training, they may be violating 659A.882 and our rule. As such, we support amending this law to include initial active duty training so that our National Guard are protected and have this leave paid both when they first sign up and go into this initial active duty training and the regular reoccurring active duty training. With that, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 2241, and I would be happy to answer any additional questions.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just a point, correct me if I'm wrong, Kate, but it's coming back to me now. In 2009, I actually did have an individual, I don't remember if they were a constituent or not, reach out to me and explain to me that
Protections for uniform service?
The Hospital Service Corps, what was the technical term that...
Chair Esquivel, members of the committee, Representative Huffman, it is United States Public Health Service.
Okay. They were actually uniformed service people, and I didn't realize, but I appreciated them reaching out and explaining that to me.
Any other questions? General Caldwell.
Mr. Co-Chair, and members of the committee, co-chairs, vice co-chairs, members, we support the House Bill 2241. Correction, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director at the Oregon Military Department. We support these changes. We think that these have been, obviously, the definition needed clarification. I'm glad that people have brought it to everybody's attention. More importantly, I think it's the right step to move toward the initial active duty as well. I've yet, 40 years as of yesterday in this organization, I've yet to figure out why that came about. And I think it was a federal issue back in the 50s, and it's just hung on. It makes absolutely no sense, because if you join the active component, it would apply. If you join the Guard or the Reserve, it didn't. It never made sense to me then. It doesn't make sense to me now. So I think this goes a nice full step forward to get the state of Oregon in the right place on this. So I fully support the bill and appreciate the good Representative Matthews and his co-signers on this for bringing it forward.
Thank you. Any questions to the General?
Go ahead, Representative Matthews.
This isn't for the general, but thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just a general comment. I'll get some credit for it, but I really don't deserve it. I want to thank the Labor Commissioner Vakian's office, but specifically you, Ms. Newhall. Thank you very much for bringing this to our attention. As the person that chief sponsored the first bill effort, we thought we were going in the right direction, and this now completes that circle. Now we'll be done. So thank you very much for bringing that forward, and thank the commissioner for me as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And General, congratulations or condolences on 40 years. great job.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Huffman, thank you. I tried to time it back then. Of course, I was, 18 years old, so I knew exactly to do it on the state's birthday. You know, I wished I was that smart.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to note that in our last hearing, I had requested some information on MSTs, and General Caldwell's folks provided me a full packet in a very timely manner, which I'd be happy to share with the rest of the committee. So I just wanted to say thanks for that.
No problem. Thank you.
Anyone else would like to testify on 2241, House Bill 2241? If not, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2241. Opening a public hearing on House Bill 2403. Could you read the bill, please?
House Bill 2403 requires state agencies to partner with the Oregon Military Department to provide reintegration services to veterans. This has an emergency clause and it's effective on passage.
Thank you. Joe Holliday, Mike Burton, and Brigadier General Caldwell again.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Mike Burton. I'm the chair of the Legislative Task Force on Veterans Reintegration. I am a veteran, 30 years Air Force retired, had some combat tours in Laos. I'm here today in support of House Bill 2403. This comes to you from the Legislative Task Force on Veterans Reintegration. It's a simple bill that could have significant return. As you know, Oregon boasts the best military reintegration team in the country. In fact, model for lots of other places around the country that come here, take a look at what we're doing and simply implement those systems inside the state, their states. As evident during the semi-annual reintegration summits, which we hold in Oregon, hundreds of people, groups, and organizational partners partner with the reintegration team to provide services for our returning soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines. The goal of the task force with HB 2403 is twofold. First, it is to codify some of what's already happening voluntarily. Secondly, House Bill 2403 is intended to create a no-wrong-door approach in helping veterans reintegrate in their communities by using existing state resources and leveraging to help veterans. As you know from the previous work completed by the Governor's Task Force on Veteran Services in 2008, I was a co-chair of that committee as well, the integration period is 36 months. When veterans come home to Oregon, they are scattered across the state. And because Oregon does not have active-duty military bases, reintegration services cannot be centralized and must be delivered from Astoria to Gold Beach, from Pendleton to Portland, and so on. The task force believes that every returning veteran should be able to access reintegration services no matter where they choose to live. But doing so will take partnering in ways that have not been done previously. The mission of the task force was to regionalize Oregon's reintegration efforts. Like much in this state, the further away you live from the I-5 corridor, the more difficult it is to deliver these services. As the task force reviewed options, task force members from the Department of Human Services and the community colleges and the Workforce Development Department, as well as OUS, noted that they have field offices in numerous locations around the state, including rural and remote Oregon. Further discussion centered on identifying other state resources that could be accessed by reintegrating veterans locally, such as DMV offices, universities, colleges, community action organizations, and more. By partnering with these state resources in local communities, the reintegration team could expand its efforts statewide, reaching veterans and their families in need, no matter what their geographical location. Task force envisioned a system by which a veteran could walk into any local state agency office, say they're a veteran, and interested in services, and then they would be provided information regarding the reintegration team, what's available from the ODVA, the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, and the other county veteran services officers, and more. Through the partnerships created in this bill, no matter which state agency the veterans engaged, information could be provided. In other words, no wrong door. It's important for a number of reasons that you're all familiar with. We have veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic brain injuries, military sexual trauma. They have significant unemployment among veterans. There's financial problems, particularly in mortgage and bankruptcy, divorce, domestic violence, self-medication and drugs and alcohol, criminal justice issues, and suicidal ideation. And we've had some incidents of that recently. While not every veteran has these problems, a significant percentage of veterans are experiencing one or more. While there are services and programs to address these issues, the reintegration team, ODVA, and all the other providers cannot help if they don't know who needs help. Currently, it is a very difficult task to ask to help if you are in Hermiston and you don't know where to turn. This House bill, should it become a law, the reintegration team and the ODVA will work to educate veterans on their ability to access reintegration information from their local state offices. By providing the service and programs our reintegrating veterans need today, we're going to hopefully and significantly decrease the cost of caring for our veterans in the future. I thank you for your consideration of this bill, and we'd be happy to answer questions, I suppose, after the others testify.
Chair, Co-Chair Esquivel, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Holliday, Assistant Vice Chancellor for Student Success Initiatives, Oregon University System. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in favor of House Bill 2403. The OUS supports this bill. I'm here to make sure you know that, and also to let you know that we are already well on the path to serving the needs of veterans and improving veterans' reintegration. I've provided some written testimony that summarizes the efforts on the campuses, so I won't repeat that here, but suffice to say that we're well down this road in the Oregon University system. We look forward to continuing to working with the Oregon Military Department, with ODVA, and with our partners in the community colleges. I would also say, just a little unsolicited, I suppose, that the campus veteran services officers have been instrumental in helping us move down this road, and so if given the opportunity, we will support House Bill 2402 as well, which seeks funding for that program. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be glad to answer questions as well.
General?
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm a Deputy Director of the Reagan Military Department. I think I checked the wrong block. We wanted to stay neutral on this bill, and the only reason is because we feel we're doing most of these activities right now without having to put it into law, but if the committee wants to put it into law and the legislature wants to do it, that's fine with us. We have no heartburn either way. I would point out that I think by the efforts of the previous administration and Paul Evans, who's in the back of the room, we've been able to, I think, nudge the feds to create more opportunities for our soldiers and our service members throughout the state with creations of clinics in LeGrand and Bend and a couple other locations. And I think that the task force system has worked quite well during the interim with interested parties to come in and start find the holes that we know that are out there. My hat's off to both the community colleges and the Community College Workforce Development Department, and of course the higher ed, who have been extremely great partners. As we indicated before, we have every 6 months we have a summit for reintegration that we conduct, and we bring all partners in. I would tell you that is initial summit, I think, had something on the order of about 50, 60 people. They average now about 150, 200. And those summits are all interested parties, and we collaborate on how we can do the job better. The resourcing, of course, is always a challenge, and we're experiencing that in this budget cycle. And now we're seeing that the federal government is capping and, in some cases, cutting funds. So we're going to have a resource challenge this next 2 years. It's going to be substantial. I can tell you that right now. Having said that, on the good news side, and I briefed this committee earlier with it, our deployments are starting to lessen. We also know that we got the active component soldiers that are coming home daily. Mr. Willis can tell you about that load that shows up every day. So anything we can do to continue this outreach, anything we can do to keep our soldiers and their families and the service members connected to these resources is absolutely vital. So if this is the best way, if this is what the committee wants to do, we're all for it.
Thank you, General. Any questions for the panel?
Can I comment? I'd just like to say, as someone who just went through this whole process, when reintegration happened last summer, Oregon does a terrific job with this. There's certainly room to grow it. When we had soldiers that came back home to no jobs last year, part of that reintegration was including employers in our state. And there was an event at Clackamas where pretty much anybody who wanted a job got a job that day because our employers showed out in force. And I think that whether this gets moved into law or not, the fact that our state National Guard has taken this on and has included families and has really reached out on these events, I think is a monumental. These yellow ribbon ceremonies that we're doing where we're bringing folks in and doing a 30, 60, 90 and having the soldiers come back in, including the families, is a big deal. And so, any support we can lend to that, having just gone through that, I think is tremendous. So thank you for the work that you guys are doing.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Parrish, if I may comment on that. In fact, is Representative Parrish was unemployed at the time, and now she has a job.
I had a job before I came here.
Thanks, General.
Co-Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair.
I couldn't resist.
Mr. Co-Chair, if I could make one.
Mike has a comment.
Mr. Co-Chair, if I can make one other comment. Again, Mike Burton. General Caldwell is absolutely right that a lot of the things that we're talking about are going on and we've been working on. I got the first memorandum of understanding with Mr. Willis, the head of the ODVA, to put the VSOs on a campus several years ago at Portland State, and that's been extremely successful. The Yellow Ribbon groups, all the groups across the state that work to do this. The point of this bill, though, is to really codify, in a sense, with the departments of the state, various state agencies, to pay attention to this, because even though we all sit here and understand ourselves, because most of us are veterans, have been involved in these things, how important that is to bring it to our attention, there's a number of people in agencies that simply just don't remember that. So someone that comes in and they don't know where to send these vets or how to deal with a vet when it comes in looking for the help, when in fact that help is readily there, is the intent here is to ask those departments to please take us on as part of their training, as part of what they're doing for these folks, that we don't miss the opportunity that we might otherwise miss.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. General, I don't know if you can address this now or not, but along these lines, in a conversation we had a couple of years ago, and I think Chair Witt will remember this also, you had stated that regarding reintegration and reemployment, one of the worst offenders was state agencies. Can you comment on that? Have we made improvement in that area?
Mr. Co-Chair, Co-Chairs and Representative Huffman, I think that is true. I think that, you know, this happened during the previous administration, and if I had a rearview mirror, I'd be pointing at Paul Evans again in the back of the room, but I think if I was king for the day, I would have told all state agencies, if you have a veteran apply for a job, you don't give them the 5 points, you give them the job unless if they're qualified to do it. We've never not gone that far, and I think that in some respects, a lot of agencies go through the motions, give them the points, but that's as far as it goes. And, of course, you know, this is a select group of people that I think that we've all, those of us that understand this group of folks, you know, we're part and partial to that. But on the big scale, indeed, I think that we've seen less issues with state government over the last 3 to 4 years than we saw before. I will tell you that local government still got a ways to go. If you look at when we see cases that come up through the federal, typically through the federal employment process where we have conflicts, it's very rarely do we see a private industry individual that's not doing the right thing and rehiring these folks that had a job, et cetera. But we do see it quite frequently in the public sector, mainly at the county and local levels. But even if you look at the total, we're talking probably two or three of those a year max. Now, 7, 8 years ago, I tell you that I was dealing with two or three a month, and now we're down to two or three a year. So I think we're making good progress. I think everybody's kind of getting the message, and we've only got one going right now that's really significant. It's with private industry. It's not with state government. So that kind of gives you kind of a thumbnail from my perch where I see these things kind of bubble up. So is it better? You bet. And after this last deployment, 3,000 people going out. But remember, when they left, about 35-40% of them were unemployed. When we came back, 50% of them considered themselves unemployed. So, you know, that had an impact as well. The good news of that group is that we're down, the last number was 22% consider themselves unemployed to date a year later. And the majority of those of that group actually went back to school. I would say probably 80% of that group went back to school, either community college or the university system, in order to enhance their employability. So I think we're getting the message across, we're getting the right things done, but we've still got a significant ways to go, and a lot of that has to do with the market. There just simply aren't jobs out there. But as Representative Parrish indicated, we had a Clackamas. I would tell you that we could have probably hired 1,000 people that day with all those different employers. The report we got was about 150 of them actually went for final interviews to get employed and got employed. So some of this is the reaction of the soldiers still trying to decompress. We've learned to not do it too quick when they get home to back it off. And frankly, there's some pretty good benefits. Some of these young men and women say, well, I'll live on unemployment for a while. And then we see them at crisis time when the unemployment's gone and they're showing up and say, I got to have a job tomorrow, which creates a lot of difficulty for us to try to do that. So we've got some work to do inside of our organization to enhance their employability and make sure that they're working it. We're actually right now, I just got an email this morning, our unit in Iraq today is the 3rd of the 116th from my old battalion from Eastern Oregon, and they're already starting right now working with connecting to Fort Oregon, looking at job opportunities, identifying those people that do not have jobs when they get home. And so they're really, really going aggressive on this issue. So we've learned a lot of new strategies through this process to start early, keep pounding it, keep going after it. So, yeah, we're getting a lot better, but we're not there yet.
Good. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Anyone else would like to testify on House Bill 2403? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2403. Open up a public hearing on House Bill 2404. Director Willis and Brian DeLatchman.
Hello. Mr. Co-Chairs, Co-Vice Chairs, and other two members of the committee.
Can we read the bill first? Thank you.
All right.
House Bill 2404 creates a tax credit for mental health professionals who provide services to veterans. This takes effect on the 91st day following adjournment, Sunday.
Now you're on.
Now I'm on. For the record, Brian DeLashman, I'm here representing the Oregon Nurses Association. The ONA supports the bill. I just have one amendment, technical amendment, and I think during the interim, it's my understanding this bill was introduced at the request of the interim committee. They did leave two mental health providers off the list. You include psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, and therapists, but you did not include mental health nurse practitioners and clinical nurse specialists, which also provide services to this population, and we would ask that you adopt the Dash 1 amendment. Thank you.
Just a second here. Do we have that? Okay, well, we get in a work session. We'll look into that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Director Willis.
Thank you, Chair Escoval. For the record, I am Jim Willis, the Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I'm here today to support House Bill 2404. This bill comes from the legislatively directed task force on women veterans health care, but this concept would be of benefit to all of our veterans in Oregon. As we continue the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, one of the so-called signature injuries of this conflict has been post-traumatic stress disorder. According to studies, about 20% of the force is reporting PTSD symptoms when assessed. However, this number may be a bit deceiving in that these assessments require the soldier, sailor, airman, or marine to self-identify their symptoms, and we all know that many of them are not doing so. The bottom line in Oregon is demand for mental health is outpacing supply. Mental health care, I should say, is outpacing supply. The United States Department of Veterans Affairs has vet centers providing PTSD counseling in Portland, Salem, Eugene, Grants Pass, and Bend. The United States Department of Veterans Affairs also provides mental health counseling at their hospitals and community-based outpatient clinics. However, the task force learned during tours to the VA medical facilities that VA providers can have patient loads of more than 100 veterans seeking help. Veterans complain they cannot see their VA mental health counselor as often as they need to due to this high demand. Further, VA's system, while ever expanding, does not cover the entire state. Veterans in rural and remote Oregon face additional barriers to seeking mental health, including transportation, weather, and distance. House Bill 2404 is an attempt to address in some small way the veteran demand for mental health treatment. By providing a tax incentive for mental health providers, the task force hopes that local providers would be interested in seeing veteran clients in their communities, helping to meet the ever-increasing demand for mental health treatment. The task force looks at House Bill 2404 as an investment. By providing a tax credit now, the state will be saving money in the long run in social service and criminal justice costs of not treating veterans suffering from various mental and emotional issues. Today we talk about the cost of Vietnam veterans in terms of homelessness, law enforcement contacts, social service, and more. The reason for that is that we did not assess or treat these veterans when they came home, some 40 years ago, I might add. Instead, we ignored them, resulting in significant costs down the road. The old saying, you can pay me now or pay me later, is true in this case. House Bill 2404 will not solve the problem of demand for veterans needing health care. However, it will be part of the solution, especially in areas where the VA cannot provide the service. Thank you for hearing this bill today, and let me add that while I had not heard of the Dash 1 amendment until just now, it does sound reasonable to me to include those additional practitioners. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that members of the committee might have.
Any questions for Director Willis? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jim, just wondering if you have any idea what the impact might be, numbers of people. Is it 2,500 per annual credit?
Chair Esquivel and Representative Boone, I do not know, but I certainly can find out and get that back to the committee.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, well, if you figure 20%, and I think, and the general will help me with this if I get it wrong, but I think we've deployed like, or had 13,000 deployments just in the guard side. So if you look at 20% of that, and then look at those that might be seeking treatment, that'll give you some idea of the demand. And then what you're asking for is, can you equate that in dollars? I think you're asking me for the dollar impact. I'll get that for you, but I don't have it right now.
Thank you. Follow up?
Yes.
I just wanted to comment and say that, you know, I think this is a really good use of our money. Just as Director Willis has outlined, and we're going to just see a tsunami of people coming back with various issues, and I think it's going to be important because I would guess, and I don't know, but I saw it's kind of making this up, but I would guess that we have more people who need the services than we have providers. And I think this will encourage our student force to maybe move into this area. Where it hasn't been, I got my degree in psychology, and I had great visions of becoming a, you know, Freud-type person, but can grow the beard. But in any case, I was literally, by my advisors, advised not to go into this field. And what I wanted to do was clinical. And they said, it's not a good field to go into. You'll go home depressed every day. You don't get enough money, blah, blah, blah. And so I went into child abuse prevention, which didn't. It kind of filled that bill, you're right. This is really important, and I hope that we all look at something like this, even though it might cost us some money. It's very important that we treat our homecoming troops, because I think that they're really going to need this.
Representative?
Thank you. You know, I think since this bill is aimed at providers, I think it's important to note that, you know, I have TRICARE. TRICARE is not the best payer. And so you've already got folks who are disinclined to accept TRICARE in the mental health side of services, because if their billable hour is $150, and I don't know what TRICARE pays, I'm just going to kind of make up some numbers here, but it's significantly less. I know for one of the services my kids receive that is not mental health but more occupational, you know, the bill comes in, they bill at $160, TRICARE pays at $80, you know, they're losing half. So you've got a group of folks, there's already a shortfall, I think, of folks in our community who are not willing to work with soldiers because the payment and reimbursement from TRICARE, and if it's coming out of Veterans Affairs dollars or wherever the pool of money is after TRICARE for Life, it is a concern. You know, when you're looking at who these providers are and their willingness to take on veterans, sometimes is dictated by payment. And so recognizing that they're already getting less than they would be if I came in and I was a cash-paying client, and using this as a carrot or incentivizing them to be more willing to open up slots in their patient schedule for these soldiers, I think, is hugely critical. So I don't think this is a huge ask in terms of what we're asking them to do to shoulder that burden, to listen to the stories of these folks who come back and need their support.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? Thank you, Director Willis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Bella Lander and Jesse Barton. May proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jesse Barton. I'm an attorney in private practice, but what I'm here as today is a member of the Board of Directors of the Returning Veterans Project. I don't know how many of the committee members are familiar with RVP, but you see for our brochure we provide a network of healthcare providers, primarily mental health care providers, that who provide pro bono or free services for veterans and their families, and also provide related health services on a statewide basis. I'm not sure, but I believe that RVP is the single largest network provider of mental health services in the state. What we are really here today to do isn't so much to speak for or against House Bill 2404. We like the concept, but it's more to, I think, given our position in this mental health provision world, that we have some insights that might be useful to the committee's deliberations on this particular bill, and have some thoughts on the bill that might be useful in improving it, or at least in helping the committee to better understand the bill and what the mental health services issues typically involve. I want to introduce Belle Landau, who's RVP's executive director. She has been since November of 2009, since she came on board. When she came on board, the RVP was in a fairly precarious financial state. We rely on contributions, voluntary contributions, fundraising through grant applications and the like to maintain our services. Again, the people receiving our services don't pay for them. They don't pay anybody for the services. The only way we can maintain our network is through voluntary contributions from our donors. But Ms. Landau was hired, I said, in November 2009. And I would like to turn this matter over to her to introduce or explain further what RVP does, and then I think she was going to turn it back to me, and I was going to talk about the bill a little bit, if that would be okay with the committee.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, my name is Belle Landau, and I'm the executive director of the Returning Veterans Project. We're a collective of unaffiliated and independent providers who have agreed to open at least one pro bono slot in their practice for current war veterans and their family members and active duty service members as well. When I became the director, we had 62 providers. And today we have 103, and we have 8 more who are joining us in March. We also, in addition to mental health, we provide acupuncture, chiropractic, naturopathic care, and massage therapy. And our mission is to provide free, confidential services to returning veterans and service members of the current Iraq and Afghanistan campaigns and their families. The organization was created by Carol Levine, who is a clinical therapist, and she was watching television in 2005 and saw some of the issues that folks were coming home with from Iraq and Afghanistan, and she wanted to give back. She thought about what she could do and realized that she was a therapist and that's what she could do. She quickly gathered 25 other therapists in the Portland Tri-County area who put together this service model. And then we added the somatic services a couple years later, the chiropractic, acupuncture, and other services like that. In 2009, we served 110 vets and donated 990 hours of service to their care. Last year, we served 254 veterans and family members, and almost 2,000 hours of care were given by our providers. So the need is great. We get calls all the time. Since the 41st came back is when our numbers doubled and more than doubled, and our information referral services have gone up 70% since their return last April. So we're filling a really important need, I think, especially with serving family members, spouses of vets, the children of vets. A mother of a fallen Oregon soldier has received weekly counseling for 2 years from the Returning Veterans Project for free. So we're very proud of the providers who work with us. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm curious. These are heartfelt stories that you have just told us about, and all too often the news that we hear is not good news. This is very good news, and I'm just wondering if you have an avenue to be able to disseminate some of this information. Are there any media sources or anything that would carry these good stories?
We have had some press. Around Veterans Day, we tend to get on one of the Portland stations and, share stories. We have just had a West Point colonel who saw one of our therapists for 8 months because of PTSD, who wants to give back. And so I'm meeting with him in about a week and a half to see what he would like to do and if he wants to tell his story. His goal is to talk to veterans through us to let them know that it's okay to get help for PTSD. So, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for all the good work that you do.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I will say one thing, that most of the veterans coming home from a combat zone don't even know what they don't even know about what's affecting them. They know something isn't quite right. They just can't put a finger on it. And so that's when they really need the help. And it's usually the first up to 9 months to a year is the most critical time. So thank you for your work. Appreciate it.
Sure. And let me say that most of our referrals come through the VA, through the Veterans Services Officers on campuses and in counties, through the National Guard, and then a variety of other sources as well. Our brochures have gotten to AA meetings and things like that. I don't know how they've gotten there, but to rehab facilities and different places where veterans are. So it's a good thing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else would like to comment or testify on House Bill 2404. Anyone else? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2404. Go into a work session. Would you read House Bill 2406? Work session is now open. Would you read the bill, please?
House Bill 2406 establishes a telephone line for victims of military sexual trauma. This has an emergency clause. It's effective on passage, and it has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. Any discussion? A motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2406 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Witt has moved House Bill 2406 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Any objection? Seeing none, so passed. Close the work session on 2406. Open up a work session on House Bill 2407. Any comment on House Bill 2407? Oh, we better read it first. I'm sorry.
House Bill 2407 directs the Department of Veterans Affairs to develop and implement a program to encourage women veterans to utilize veterans' health care benefits. This has an emergency clause. It's effective on passage, and it also has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. Any discussion on House Bill 2407?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So on these two bills, you're going to leave it up to me in Ways and Means to deal with the fiscal. Is that what you're saying?
We don't want to put the pressure on your Representative Huffman, but it's all in your hands.
Tom will work with me. I'm sure we'll figure something out.
Mr. Chairman, it's always helpful to have our own private liaison.
Right. We have an insider here, so.
Representative Huffman, I will just say the language that I've heard in the building sometimes is, it's just a drop in the bucket. So if you go down there with that, at the fiscal on these, you might get some support.
Any further discussion on House Bill 2407? Seeing none, may I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill 2407 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Chair Witt has moved House Bill 2407 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation and subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Any objection? Seeing none, so passed. We're going to hold over, close the public hearing on 2407, and we're going to hold House Bill 2578 over until next time, so therefore we won't open a work session on that. We do have one other housekeeping duty before we adjourn, and that is an introduction, introduce a bill. So I have to go back to a public hearing now, correct?
for the bill or a work session?
I think I go to public hearing, yes.
No, wait a minute.
I thought it was a work session.
You could open and close a public hearing and then go into work session if that's necessary. But
yeah, but we're in a work session, so yeah, we would have to go into public.
I think you're right, Mr. Chairman. I think it is a work session.
Yeah, it's a work session, yeah, I believe. Yeah.
So I'll open another work session on Legislative Council 3901. And may I get a motion on LC 3901?
Chair Esquivel, I move that LC 3901, dated February 11th, 2011, be introduced as a committee bill.
Representative Hussman has moved LC 3901 to be adopted as a committee bill. So we shall proceed. And any objection? Seeing none, so moved. Anything for the good of the order? Oh, yeah, 24, you mean 2406. Let me open a hearing again on 2406 because I didn't assign that. I think that we need to have a carrier on that, mm-hmm, on both those bills because they are. No, we can't because we're sending the Ways and Means.
Yes. Yes.
So we don't have to do that.
So we're good to go.
You're messing with my mind. Anyway, anything for the good of the order?
Mr. Chairman, I would ask that the committee administrator make the delegation from Central Oregon aware of LC 3901 so that if they choose to contact the veteran that they might be aware of that.
Anything for the good of the order? So adjourn.
Yeah. The Fisher Committee.
Good meeting.
Sorry about that.